Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the richest nation in the world right after this. You know, in Job 38, verse 24, we read a scientific question. It says, "By what way is it that the light is parted?" Or paraphrased, it would say, "By what way or technique is the light apportioned or separated?" Now, imagine asking that question 4,000 years ago. Today, of course, it's a simple one, and the student simply answers, well, by passing it through the prism of the spectroscope. But who could have known that 4,000 years ago back in Job's day? Now, when we heat a metal red hot or heat any substance until it's incandescent, it gives forth rays of light. These rays, after passing through the prism of the spectroscope, divide themselves on the graph according to the content of the matter that sent them forth. So when a ray of light reaches us from some far-flung star out in space, we need only to pass that light ray through the spectroscope to see the composition of the star and the proportion of each of its ingredients. This division of light rays is always constant, and it doesn't vary in the least particular. So we may always rely upon the results. Spectroscopic analysis is an exact science, and this is the manner by which the light is apportioned. Now, this places us in a quandary, because either Job knew this, or we're dealing with supernatural wisdom that's being revealed here. And that's just one more of the many examples of science in the scripture. And this is one of the many lessons in our Mosaic Law School that we teach here in Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. Doesn't cost you anything. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and then you can download that free general law CD package right there off of our webpage. That's georgegordon.org, and go to the archives page. All right, last time we were talking about, remember this young woman? She said, you know, healthcare in America is a right. You're entitled to it, and I guess you're entitled to it at my expense, except that I'm kind of a jerk, and I'm not going to buy your health insurance. Now, that's just the way I see it. Now, I don't blame you people for wanting me to buy your health insurance. I'd like you people to buy me a new Lexus. And since you're not going to buy me a new car, I'm not going to pay for your health care. So how do you like that? And I can't forget the young woman now who believes that, and I'm sure she's sincere, believes that I, along with everybody else, owes her health care insurance. It's a right. It's kind of like national defense. You know, we have a right to expect our government to protect us from all enemies, foreign and domestic. So we have a right to those Polaris submarines out there protecting our borders from Russian missiles and a Russian invasion or something. You know, that's a right. We have a right to life. That's protected by thou shalt not steal. And we have a right to property. That's protected by thou shalt not steal. Now, I guess that from this woman's point of view, we have a right to national health care insurance. Well, you know, you have a right to good health. And good health is one of those elements that God, the Creator, put into play and counts as one of the elements to being wealthy. If you'll look at these two sections again, this is Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, where he's talking about good health. Listen to this. He says, "I'm going to give you rain in due season, and the land shall yield her increase, and the trees of the field shall yield their fruit." If you have rain out of season, like Hurricane Katrina, that's not a blessing, that's a curse and costs you a lot of money. In fact, the damage done to New Orleans, the president said, was about $500 billion. Well, that's not a blessing. Those people down in New Orleans have had their houses flooded out and lost their jobs, and their businesses are put out of business, and the thing has to be rebuilt. You know, that's a net loss. And the $500 billion that we're pouring in there to rebuild that thing over there is a net loss. The people who are rebuilding New Orleans are already rebuilding something that was already there. The city was already there. We could have been spending the same amount of time, effort, and energy doing something else. We didn't have to rebuild our houses, did we? All right, so that's a curse. That's not a blessing. That's a loss. And losses and curses are not profitable. That's not where wealth comes from. I mean, let's put it this way. Let's suppose that we think that by rebuilding New Orleans, it puts all these people to work. Well, if destroying New Orleans and rebuilding it puts all these people to work, let's burn down Chicago. Can you imagine how much work and how much prosperity we're going to get from the burning down of Chicago? Now, if the destruction of New Orleans and Chicago is that profitable, can you imagine how rich we're going to get when we burn down Los Angeles, Philadelphia, and New York? I mean, can you see the money? Now, from the contractor's point of view, you know, from the plumbers, the contractors, the electricians, and all the people that are in the building trades that are going to be working on these projects, rebuilding these cities, they're going to say, wow, boy, does this burning down cities really stimulates the economy. But that's what we talked about in the last program. That's a transfer of wealth. That transfers wealth from one pocket to somebody else's. It's not the creation of new wealth. Now, if you want to be wealthy, we need to create wealth where it didn't occur before, where it wasn't located before. And we do that when we go out and find a new oil field, or when we go out and we build a new sawmill and start cutting boards. We do that when we plant trees in the ground, and then we harvest new peaches that never occurred before. Planting orchards, planting trees, building manufacturing plants, producing automobiles, producing boards, building houses. These are activities that create new wealth. They create something that wasn't there before. Now, our socialist government has it in their minds that what we need to do is just print up more money and then just go out here in the countryside and start hiring people to dig holes and fill them up again. Well, okay, for the guy digging the hole and the guy that's filling the hole up, it makes work for them. But you and I, the farmers out here, we got to grow corn, and we got to take a portion of our profits and pass it along with a lot of other people to keep these guys working, digging holes and filling them up again. And what that does is transfers some of our wealth into somebody else's pocket. But it's not the creation of new wealth. And that's why sickness and disease is a net drain on society. When you have people locked up in prison, that's a loss, not a gain. When you have somebody that's born and he develops autism or some kind of a defect, and then we have to go out here and build ramps and wheelchairs for those people to move around in, that's not adding to our nation's wealth, that's detracting from it. That's a net loss, that's a cost. Well, let's try it this way. Let's suppose we had a nation with no autism, no sickness, no disease, no doctors, no hospitals, and everybody's in perfect health. Nobody's got any asthma, allergies, cancer, heart disease. In short, $1.7 trillion of our economy is wiped out. Yeah, all of the healthcare part of the economy is wiped out. Now, in place of that, all of these healthy, robust people now are going about planting more corn, building more ships, building more theme parks at Disneyland, or doing something else that other people want to buy, want to use, and want to do. All right, now, as a result of that, instead of doctors, we now have service people on a carnival cruise. Instead of hospital nurses, we now have people working at Disneyland putting in new rides for us to play on. Or somebody's working building new tractors for us to use so that we can produce more food so that we can have more abundance. Drill more holes in the ground so we can get more oil at less cost so that we can have more gasoline to drive around more and have more fun with. I mean, that's what life is all about. It's buying, selling, and trading in the free marketplace, those things that people want to buy, sell, and trade. People that go out and manufacture, or they make things that other people want. Now, I can remember years ago when I was a kid, there was no such thing as a computer. Some guy invents a computer, he comes along one day, sells it, somebody else sees it and says, gee, I'd like to have one of those. I am willing to work and then produce stuff for the guy that builds computers if he'll build me one of those. I can remember back about 1982 or 3 or something like that, the first computer I bought was one of those, that was an Apple IIe, I think, or something like that. It cost $5,000. It had a printer with a daisy wheel that typed 135 words a minute. My God, we thought that was the greatest thing since sliced white bread. My boy told me the other day, he said, that thing is so archaic and such a piece of trash, there aren't even any around in the museums to look at anymore. Well, you know, but I paid $5,000 for it, and I made more than $5,000 off of it. So it was profitable to me. And I went out and I bought a bigger, better one, and it was profitable to me, and so on down the line. That's the free marketplace, making things that people need and want. Now, government comes along, and they say, okay, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to decide what the marketplace is going to do. This is called central planning. Big governments do this, central planning. Now, the president has decided that we're going to expand health care. We're going to maintain hospitals and doctors. We're going to institutionalize it, and we're going to make everybody buy it. Well, I was in the legislature up in Idaho one year, and I went into the transportation committee, and we were talking, I think we were talking about insurance, mandatory auto insurance. And I said, well, what I'd like to see this, the state legislature do is to come up with a plan whereby we have compulsory waterbed laws. We need a compulsory waterbed law. And the way it'll work is this. You enact the law and you require everybody in the state of Idaho to have a waterbed and to carry proof of waterbed ownership with them at all times in their back pocket. And if you find some guy that doesn't have his card in his back pocket or doesn't own a waterbed, you prosecute him, convict him, and throw him in jail for 90 days. Just like we do with this insurance law. The committee members, they were just sitting there with their mouths agape looking at me like, is this guy a lunatic? And I concluded by saying, well, gentlemen, if we can compel the people of the state to buy insurance, why can't we compel them to buy water beds, carpet, and television sets? And so now they've expanded this compulsory auto insurance to compulsory health insurance. Well, then why can't we compel you to buy compulsory homeowners insurance, fire insurance, and life insurance? Why can't we compel you to buy Chevrolet automobiles, carpet, and Harley-Davidson motorcycles? I'm not in favor of it. I'm just saying, oh, why not? It would really be good for the Harley-Davidson company. It'd be really great for General Motors. Now, if you remember last time, we were talking about this thing of being able to service the debt, and I asked the question, well, boys and girls, can you say bankrupt, boys and girls? Because that's where America is. And so what we need is a remedy. That's you and I, Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife. I'm not going to prevent the nation from going broke. It's already broke, and we just haven't recognized it yet, and the repercussions from the events haven't transpired yet, but they're coming. We're just like people who haven't made their house payment for about three or four months. We know that it's just a matter of time until we're evicted from the house. It hadn't happened yet. We're still here. We're going to be here tomorrow and next week and maybe even next month, but we know that eventually we're going to be out on the street. And so now's the time to start planning for that. You know, eventually here, boys and girls, we're all going to be out on the street. We are going to be on COD with rationing. So if rationing is coming, well, then what's going to be rationed? Well, here's a couple, three ideas for you to keep in mind. In World War II, when we were short of stuff coming in on ships, and you couldn't get spices and coffee. Those were rationed items. And so in this new rationing over here, I would suspect that we're going to have a shortage of things like cinnamon, bananas, coffee, nutmeg. You just take a look in your cupboard, and you look at the items that are being imported. Now, somebody's going to say, well, you can't store bananas. I can. I have, let's see how many I've got, 205. Let's see how many bananas I've stored here. Long-term storage of bananas. You know, you got to be pretty good at this. I have 205 quarts, 205 times 15. Let me show you how this works. I have stockpiled 3,075 bananas. That's what I've got, anticipating that there's going to be a shortage of bananas here in the United States. I was in the store the other day down at Harps, and I noticed that bananas were 49 cents a pound. Now, for years, I've been going into the produce section. You know, when the bananas get kind of old and they get spots on them, they lower the price. And when they lower the price down, they get to a point where you know your bananas get so poor that nobody will buy them. They won't even take them at 20 cents. So I go over there and I say, look, I think there's 40 pounds of bananas in a box, in a case. So I tell the guy, I say, now, why don't you sell me that case of bananas? And they've been selling them to me for $3.50 a case. That's the real spoiled ones, you know. Well, they're really not spoiled. They're just black, and they've got, well, not totally black, but they've got black spots on them, you know. Actually, what that means is the enzyme action in the banana is growing, and the banana is picking up sugar. They're really better that way, and they really make good banana chips. And so for $3.50 for 40 pounds, well, how much is that? $3.50 divided by 40 pounds. Well, that's about 9 cents a pound. So I've been buying bananas for about 10 cents a pound, and then I put them in my dehydrator over here, and I dry them. 15 bananas fit into a one-quart jar. So I buy banana chips and bring them home, make banana chips, stick them in quart jars, and put them on the shelf. How long will they keep? Oh, I'd say about 3,000 years, you know, something like that. And there you are. Now, I did that because I'm anticipating that there's going to be rationing, and you're not going to get bananas in here. And so if you want potassium, bananas seem to be a pretty good source of it. I guess maybe you better have some on hand. So that's what I did. And I've been telling my students that for years. I said, you know, you might as well get used to the idea that there's going to be a period of time, at least for a few years. Now, the Argentines went through this bankruptcy in 2003. As I speak, 7 years later, they're about to go back under bankruptcy again. They're having some more problems down there. I was reading the other day. They've been kind of dragging along here. But their unemployment rate isn't at 62% anymore. Their economy is, you know, recovering and reviving. It's much better than it was in 2003. Still not as good as it was in times past, but, you know, it's getting better. And all of us, if you want coffee to drink, you better get some on the shelf. You want bananas to eat, you better get some on the shelf. You want cinnamon, be thinking about it, because our president and our governmental apparatus is going to have to decide how we're going to spend our $200 billion a year that we're exporting. And then what we're going to spend it on and what we're going to import it for. And I'm not sure that they're going to let bananas at the top of the list or coffee or anything else. Now, you can rest assured there's going to be a bunch of people out there smuggling that stuff across the border. During the war in Kosovo, coffee was $4 a cup and gasoline $20 a gallon, and there was no shortage of either. The free marketplace will provide. Now, in America, there's no shortage of cocaine, heroin, or marijuana here. And it sells for about 20%. On the street, about 20% of what it sells for in the drugstore. Now, that's the free marketplace in action, and you can rest assured that the free marketplace is going to provide you with bananas. Whether you're going to have the money to pay for it, that's another question, another issue. Now, you remember last time we were talking about this thing of the paying off of the debt? Let me run that one by you one more time in case you missed the point. The debt that we have is unserviceable because it now stands at $100 trillion, and you only make about $46,000 a year. That's per capita. Now, the reality of it is, I showed you a little earlier, corporations don't pay any tax. So that means that General Motors, General Electric, Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, and George Soros aren't going to pay anything on that debt. All of that debt is going to be serviced and paid for by you and me, like it or lump it. So any payments that are going to be made are going to come out of your $46,000. They ain't going to come out of their $46,000. And so as a result of that, then what are the chances of us being able to service the debt? Now, we owe $333,000. After we pay our taxes and all the rest, we're not going to have much more than $10,000 to pay on that debt. Now, if you're trying to pay off a $333,000 debt at $10,000 a year, and you got to service the debt interest at 5%, that's $16,000 a year. You pay $10,000 on $16,000 worth of interest, and you're $6,000 a year short, aren't you? So every year you pay $10,000 on your debt and go $7,000 deeper into the hole. So you pay on this debt, $333,000 debt, pay $10,000 a year, and 5 years later you owe $400,000. You're $50,000 further in the hole than you were. Bottom line to that is you're insolvent. The debt's not payable. So you don't need to pay anything on the debt. Once you get to the point where your house is underwater, and this is where millions of people in America are today, they owe more money on their house than the house can be sold for. You don't need to make any more payments on that house. It's already a transaction that's upside down. You're underwater, as they say. So what are we going to do? How are we going to solve this problem for Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife? Just me and you. I'm not trying to solve the problem for Bank of America or Goldman Sachs or for the United States or Greece or somebody else. I just want to solve the problem for me. What do I do to solve the problem for me? And the answer is I need to get out of debt. And I've got to get to a point where I'm at zero COD. Now, I teach a business school here, and the first thing that I ask my students when they come in the door at business school, I say, how many of you people are in debt? And virtually everybody raises their hand. They say, well, I'm in debt. And I said, okay, as long as you're in debt, you cannot make any money. How in the hell are you going to make any money if you're in debt? Wake up and smell the coffee here, kids. He who has the gold makes the rules. And the guy that's in debt is servant to the lender. How do servants make money when their masters hold all the cards or hold all the money? So the bottom line is that, no, you can't make any money while you're in debt. So the first thing we've got to do is to get you out of debt. Number one item, how do you get out of debt? Well, in some cases, you can pay it off. In most cases, you're going to have to default on it and go back to square one. When you default on your debt, then your creditor is going to take all of your collateral. So this should reduce you to about zero COD. Now, once you get to the point where you're at zero COD, now you can start to make money. And once you start to make money, it takes 36 months to go from zero COD to $100,000 or the equivalent, that'd be about 100 ounces of gold, in a hole in the ground, and it takes about 3 years to do that. It doesn't take 300 years, it takes about three. Now, right away, sometimes people say to me, well, you know, I'm 50 years old and I haven't made $100,000 yet. Well, that's because nobody's ever showed you how yet, have they? Now, Bill Gates made $100,000, didn't he? And Warren Buffett made $100,000, and George Soros made $100,000. There's lots of people out there that have made $100,000 or $200,000 or $500,000 or made a million. How did those people do that? What are the secrets of making money? Has anybody ever written it down? You know, did people like Henry Kaiser or Henry Ford or George Soros, anybody, did anybody ever write down how they did that? Does anybody have a least common denominator in making money? And maybe we could emulate what they did. I remember I had a guy one time working for me, and he worked at the bus company. And he was a pretty good worker. And I suggested, I said, Floyd, why don't you just quit driving that Greyhound bus and come over here and go to work for me? You'll make more money. And then at some point in time, you can branch off and go open up your own company and go do your own thing, and then you'll probably do better at it. He mulled that over for a while, and then he came back to me and he said, no, I'm not going to do that. See, I've already been with the bus company for 22 years. In 8 years, I can retire. And he said, the tragedy of it all is that the bus company has me. They've got me. I've got 22 years in, and if I quit now, I lose my 22 years. So I have to stick with it. I can't quit. But if I don't quit, then all I can ever get is my pension, and I'm going to miss out, and I won't be able to take my chance and see if I can make $1 million. I said, that's right. You're not. And he didn't. Now, Floyd retired from the bus company. He has a pension, and as long as that pension system works, he's going to be in great condition. But he was never able to go out and do something on his own and make his own business or make his own $1 million, if in fact he could. Now, I'm not here to tell you can make $1 million, but I always tell my students, if you're making under $100,000 a year, the equivalent thereof, you're wasting your time. And that's because the median average income in this country is $50,000. That means half the people in the country make $50,000 or more, half the people make $50,000 or less. We would have to presume, wouldn't we, that the people who are at the middle point, about $50,000, are average? Well, that means then that the guys that are making more than $50,000 are a little bit more than average. So half the people are a little bit smarter than average, and half the people are a little dumber than average. And somewhere along the line, you fit in there. Now, maybe your IQ is down around the speed limit, or maybe your IQ is, you know, up around 130 or something. But just assuming that you're like I am, and your IQ is maybe about 105, you know, just kind of average, Joe Sixpack. Well, don't you think with a little effort that you could make that $50,000 double? If you're making $50,000 a year now, and somebody said, well, let me show you how to put two and two together and make $100,000, don't you think you could probably go out and do that? Now, I'm not suggesting that I can go out and be another Bill Gates or a Warren Buffett, but I know I can make $100,000 a year. And so can you. And if you're only making $30,000, if you could get smart enough to make $60,000, that'd be twice as good as what you're doing now, isn't it? And you don't have to do that making wages. In fact, I don't know of anybody that does that making wages, unless you're working for Lockheed, pinching the girls on the butt over at the water cooler because you got a degree from some kind of a college and you got a government contract and the government's transferring money from your account to theirs. Now, there's some of that going on. But, I mean, we got to go out here and produce something. We got to go out and do something that other people want from us. Now, some examples of entrepreneurs are drug dealers down on the street. Now, that may be an illegal occupation, but those are entrepreneurs. Those are people that are out here taking a product that people want, importing it into the country, and they're going out in the marketplace and they're selling it. So what we need to do is to find something that's legal, something that people want, and then go out into the marketplace and find customers and sell that to them. And old Henry Kaiser pointed that out. He painted it on all of his cement trucks. I always remember that. When you're driving down the street and a Kaiser truck came up alongside you at the stoplight and the barrel's rolling over, and it would say, find a need. And then the barrel would roll over and it would say, and fill it. You need to find a need and fill it. Find a need and fill it. Well, what are the needs that people have? You know, if you pay attention and look around, there's all kinds of needs out there. And there are needs even when you're in a recession. The other day there was a story on the air, and it was from the O'Reilly Company. They just hit the Fortune 500, and the O'Reilly people were being interviewed, their CEO. And the CEO said, well, in recession times like we're in today, our business actually does better than it does in normal times or boom times. And the reporter asked why that was. And he said, well, in boom times, people buy new cars. But he said, in recession times like we're in today, they have to keep the car that they've got. That means that when the starter goes out, they don't go down and buy a new car. They have to come in and buy a starter and put it on. And so we actually do better and we sell more in recession times. Well, then, in recession times, there are businesses then that do better than in ordinary times. So now's not the time to be buying Gap and designer clothes. Now's the time to be buying something that's used and going out in the marketplace and finding what people need. Hey, we're at the halfway point. Let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, Please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the archives page and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements and recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or the publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, and they're mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station, but they should. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at George Gordon. That's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, let me give you a wise old saying for the day. To have repeat business, every transaction must benefit all of the parties and benefit them every time. So if you want to have repeat customers, every transaction that you make must benefit all of the parties, and they have to do it every time. Otherwise, the guy's not coming back. All right, now remember, I showed you that the richest nation in the world is going to be a nation that has 22 elements or 22 indici. Those 22 indici are given to us by God Almighty himself in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. And as a result of that, God himself then has told us what it is that he expects in order for us to come out to wealth. Now, in America today, we think that wealth has to do with debt, and that the more debt we have, the wealthier we are. Now, the truth of the matter is, the more debt you have, the poorer you are, and the concept that America is the richest nation in the world is the United States, where we have the biggest debt in the world. Well, the truth of the matter is, it's the guy that's got the most in the way of property that is the wealthy guy in the world. It's not the guy with debt, it's the guy with property. Who has the most cows? Who has the most corn? Who has the most wheat? That's not the guy that's got the most debt. That's the guy that's got the most property. Now, the United States used to be the wealthiest nation in the world. But like the prodigal son, we went out and squandered it all, spent it all, blew it all. And today, we still have the three Rolls Royces and the big house. But we haven't been making our payments over the last 50 years. And it's starting to become obvious to our creditors that they're not going to get paid, or they're not going to get paid all of it. And they're beginning to wonder when they're going to get paid some of it. Is this country going to be able to pay off or not? And I just showed you, said the answer is no. There isn't any way in hell that 300 million Americans can pay off $100 trillion of debt at 5% interest. And I'm not sure that the interest rate is 5%. I think that's artificially low. So since we're already insolvent and the nation's going broke, this has happened to countries in the past, like Germany in 1924. It happened in the United States in 1783. It happened to us in 1933, again, with the Great Depression. That was actually a bankruptcy. It's happened to countries all over the world. Argentina just happened to them in 2003. Zimbabwe is going through it right now. Japan, Italy. In fact, I would suspect that probably all the nations of the world are going to go through it. And if that's the case, that's really going to be traumatic. That sounds like the Great Tribulation to me. Now, when this event transpires, all of us are going to be in it. Well, except you 70 million rapturists. You guys are going to be out of it. You're going to be off in La La Land someplace, you know, smoking Roy Tan cigars and drinking mint juleps. But other than the 70 million rapturists, you know, the rest of us are going to have to face reality. And so in order for me to face reality, I took a look at the problem and I said, well, I don't think I can do much to save America, but I think I can do a whole lot to save myself. So let's take a look at a couple of three more of these. Remember, the richest nation in the world would have citizens who pay cash for every purchase. I got that from Deuteronomy 28, verse 12. So a cash balance then, or cash purchases. The debtor is servant to the lender. And remember, the Apostle Paul made this statement in Romans 13, verse 8. He said, owe no man anything. So you need to get to zero COD. So as soon as we can get you to zero COD, then we can start making money. And we need to make money in geometric progression. It goes 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32. If you're working for wages, you're working arithmetically. You'll make a living, but you're not going to make any money. We need to work geometrically. You should be able to live for 3 years without any income. You'd have nearly zero crime in the country. You would have a zero birth defect rate. You would lend but not borrow, and you would have no banks in the country. Wouldn't that be kind of crazy? No banks, no insurance companies, and no stock market. Well, what's wrong with banks? Well, our Creator, this is the Creator now, God, he told us now that we ought not to have unjust weights and balances in our bag, that we should deal with just weights and balances. What is it that banks are promoting? Are they promoting gold and silver coin, or are they promoting paper, mortgages, interest, usury, second deeds of trust, derivatives, liar loans, bailouts? The banks, insurance companies, and governments are encouraging us to violate thou shalt not steal and you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. And now we've got a result. And the result is bad. If you want more of it, stick with the program that you've got. If you want to change that, then you need to go back to the Ten Commandment model and start dealing in gold and silver coin again. It's available here in Australia, Canada, the United States, and Great Britain. We are actually making gold coin. In fact, I have some recent English or British sovereign coins. Those are about a quarter of an ounce. They're actually a little less. They're 2, 3, 5, 4% gold. So they're 6% short of a quarter of an ounce. But we have gold coins available to us. I mean, we can do business in property. And if we'll do business in property, then we'll be in compliance with one of those 15 economic laws. If you'll practice these 15 economic laws, you'll make money. My experience has been, when you take a man of average intelligence, put him on gold and silver, show him the 15 economic laws, and turn him loose out in the marketplace, it takes him about 3 years, and he'll start at zero, and he'll make $100,000. He'll have, when he gets through in 3 years, he should have about $100,000. That's about 100 ounces of gold net in his pocket. Now, if you can make 100 ounces of gold, can you turn that 100 ounces into 200? I oftentimes ask people that question. Let me give you an illustration. There was a thing here. I don't know if it was eBay. I don't think it was, but there was a thing on the internet not too long ago. And there was a little town over here in Kansas, and they had six police cars. They were 2002 Crown Victorias. This was about 2005. As I recall, they were about 3 years old at the time. It's a few years ago now, but these cars were at $1,600 was the bid, and then I asked Dirk, I said, now watch that bid and see who buys them and how much they go for. Well, all six of them went for $2,600 each. I think it was six cars for $2,600. How much is that? Six times 2,600. $15,600. And it went to the Ford dealer. So the Ford dealer bought those cars. It could have been the Chevy dealer or the Chrysler dealer or anybody else. It could have been you or me or somebody else. Question arises, could you have bought those cars for $15,600? Well, if you'd have bid $20,000, I think you probably would have got them. If you'd have bid $20,000 for each one of those cars, let's try $20,000, divided by six would have been $3,300 a car. Those cars wholesaled at $11,500 each. Could you take a $3,300 investment, could you sell that for $11,000 wholesale? Could you have sold those cars for $6,600 and doubled your money? Hell, I think most anybody could have done that. And the problem is that in those kinds of cases, most people, they only want to buy one car for themselves. They're not thinking about a business. They're not thinking about, well, how do I buy all six of those cars, detail them out, and then go sell them again? But your local Ford dealer there did. You can rest assured, he took those cars in, detailed them out, cleaned them up, and then put them out on the market there for about $18,000 a piece, and sold those through the bank to people that would pay the interest charge on it. And when it was all said and done, some poor sap bought a $2,600 car for $18,000 and paid $25,000 or $24,000 or something like that by the time he paid the interest over 6 years for that automobile. Now, that's not the way to make money, but it's the way for the Ford dealer to make money. Now, if he can make money that way, can you do the same thing? maybe automobiles aren't your thing in life, and maybe you've got to do something else. But I was talking to one of my students the other day. Here's a neat little simple deal. He went to a state auction, and at the state auction, there was a pallet of aluminum license plates. And these aluminum license plates were out of date. They didn't use them. The state didn't use them. And, you know, they said 2008 on them or 2009 or something like that. And so they're not usable. And so they auctioned them off. Now, this guy took a look. There was 880 pounds of aluminum on this pallet. And so it's up for bid, and he's going to bid on this pallet. And it's got 880 pounds. Now, aluminum sells at the scrapyard for about 30 cents a pound, which would be $264. Dennis bid $125 for the pallet of aluminum, and he got it for the $125. Now, he didn't load that on his pickup. He could have. He could have had him load the pallet on his pickup. He could have hauled it away, but he didn't. He called the scrap dealer. He called the aluminum scrap dealer, and he said, I want you to come over here and pick up this pallet, and I want you to take it in, weigh it up, and then send me the check. And he did, and he got a check, and I think it was for $250. He paid $125 and got a check for $250. He doubled his money and never touched the product. Now, that's the principle that I'm telling you about. Now, he did that in just a few days. Now, the percent of profit that he made off of that was pretty phenomenal. Let me give you an illustration. Remember, I've shown you in the past that if you were to buy stocks in 1960 and got 5% per annum for 40 years, and you'd make $70,000. You know, people would call you a very astute businessman. They would say you're a genius. They would say, boy, that guy is really smart. He bought stock in 1960. It made 5% per year for 40 years. And when he cashed him out, he got paid $73,000. Wow, what a smart guy. Now, I showed you what happens in reality. Inflation's 4.7%. You only make 0.3% profit off of it. And then you got to pay capital gain on the whole $63,000 profit. That's 28% of 63,000. And so when you get through adding up the inflation and you add in the capital gain tax and how much money you got left over, the net loss is $3,800. You lost $3,800 in purchasing power over that 40 years. And people would say, my God, you're brilliant. That's not even smart business. That's not business. That's just nonsense. I don't know of any businessman that would get involved in that kind of crap. I see these investors doing it all the time, but the guys that are doing that with mutual funds. They're spending your money. They make their money on commissions. They're not making their money on stocks. I haven't seen any profit on stocks. The guys that make money on stocks are the brokers who collect their commissions right now. That's where the money's at in stocks, not in investing over the long term. That's just a fool's errand. Now, if you could buy a pallet of license plates or go to an auction anywhere, and these state auctions are everywhere. Just buy the scrap or buy the cars and buy the stuff that's there and then go out in the marketplace and sell those. And that's where the money's at. It's in buying and selling. Now, let's see how much Dennis made on this. Let's suppose that he made what we call a keystone markup, a keystone profit in this transaction. He bought it for $100 and a quarter. He sold it for $250. So in 1 year's time, he doubled his money in 1 year. At 5% interest, you don't double your money for 14.4 years. This guy did it in one transaction, and he did it within 1 year. Did better than that. Now he's got $250 in his pocket. He started out with $100 and a quarter, bought license plates, sold them for $250. But he did it in a week. In fact, he did it in less than a week. He did it in about 3 days. But if he did that in a month, and if he could do that every month 12 times in a year, he'd make 1,200% profit, wouldn't it? But if you did that in a week, and then there's 50 weeks in a year, isn't that 5,000%? Now, that's where the money's at, kids. You know, boys and girls, let's wake up and smell the coffee. Now, if you could learn how to do that, just buying, selling, and trading, and in my business school, we have 69 little examples or stories that I tell. If you go back in my archives, you'll see that there's a number of stories. I call it story time. And I take stories that I've experienced in my life or that I've watched other people do. This will be one of my stories. I just told it to you. I just learned it the other day. Dennis pulled in my yard, and we were sitting there chewing the rag. And I said, well, what have you been up to? And he said, oh, I've just been out buying, selling, and trading. Kind of like Satan, you know, talking to God. What have you been doing, Satan? I've just gone to and fro on the earth and stirring up hate and discontent, doing the thing. I tell you, boys and girls, you don't have to be a genius. You don't have to be a Rhodes Scholar to go out here and buy a pallet of license plates, for crying out loud, and then call the scrap dealer and have him pick them up and pay you for weighing them out and sell them to you. Now, maybe that isn't your forte in life. Maybe you got to find something else. But whatever it is, the money is in sales. The money is in buying, selling, and trading, doing deals. Could be real estate, could be license plates, could be automobiles. No, you just figure out where there is a need, and then how do you fill that need? That's where it's at. Now, God himself comes into the game over here, and he tells us that crime, birth defects, banks, insurance companies, stocks and bonds, interest and usury are drags on your economy. That's what drags you down. Income tax, that isn't something that produces wealth. That's something that distributes the existing wealth. A banker is, in fact, like a parasite. He's a tick in a dog's ear. His job is to convince you that you can't live without him. That's so that he can get you to support him. Otherwise, he'd have to go to work and support himself. I showed you that the other day with Josiah Stamp. He said, you know, he used to be the president of the Bank of England back in the 1920s. He said, now, if you people want to support bankers and support your slavery, then keep doing what you're doing, because that's the way to do it. Great fortunes like mine ought to be dissipated, and the world would be a happier place, remember? Banking is a criminal activity, and the United States government licenses that criminal activity. Insurance is a criminal activity. They're prohibited in Scripture. The United States government licenses the insurance industry, and they redistribute the wealth. You people down on the Gulf Coast, you bought hurricane insurance, and you bought it in good faith. And then when the hurricane came and destroyed your house, the insurance company won't pay you. And then you found out that Clause 18 in the contract said we don't pay for water damage. If your house blows away, we'll pay for it. If it floats away, you lose, we don't pay. 90% of all hurricane damage is done by water, not by the wind. They know that. They sold you a pig and a poke and you bought it, and then they screwed you. But did you learn your lesson? I'll bet you didn't. I bet you went down and bought more hurricane insurance, didn't you? All right, I'm out of time. I got to give you a final reminder that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement.